This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Formation Lab, the only podcast on the internet that can play a national anthem better than apparently the Saudi military band can. My name is Luke. I'm joined as always by my partner in crime, Timothy. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and hopefully we didn't insult any Saudis with that joke. But honestly, that was a terrible, horrible outing from your military band.
One of the
please
highlights
ditch
of the
them for any, literally any second
awful.
Grade band in America.
It was awful. One of the highlights of the weekend to me was watching George Russell try not to laugh during the anthem.
Oh, he stifled. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But it was that was up there in the Fergie Hall of Fame for bad anthems.
Yep. With just about as much snickering from the crowd and from all the celebrity shots while that was happening. But that is honestly probably one of the more entertaining things that happened this weekend.
Yep.
In the Festival of Boredom. That was thrown off of off the coast in Jeddah, and to be honest with you, Luke, man, after about lap four, I fell asleep, legitimately fell asleep, and woke up to like the last two or three laps and all the Red Bull stuff, and I feel like I didn't miss a thing.
Not really. Look, before we get into that, I have to apologize. I literally have a dude right here. I mean, you can't see it, but I'm showing Tim my window as the bright Minnesota sunlight goes out. He's literally hammering siding onto the outside of the wall in my home studio. But what are you gonna do? So if you hear knocks, that's what that is. But I think it's dead enough that we got a good product here. So Tim, I will tell you, there was one point where it occurred to me that if Lance Stroll did not break down, it would have been almost an entirely Noah's Ark top 10, right? It would have been Red Bull, Aston Martin, because I think Lance Stroll would have wheeled in up near the top. He's an adequate driver. I wouldn't say he's among the best, but he's adequate. And then it'd be Russell, Hamilton, Sainz, Leclerc, Ocon, Gasly. And then, intense. So it very much, I don't think it was a very entertaining race.
No.
I'm giving it a D minus to an F. I will say it was a very telling race because
you consider anything other than an F. Interesting thing that happened was that he was millimeters outside of his box.
That's fair.
And there was a penalty, and then Lance Stroll suffered a mechanical. Like that is the most.
You're right. You're right.
Two or three passes that were, you know, okay. There was Sergio Perez. Moving on that Aston Martin to Lance Stroll, and then it was Kevin Magnussen moving on Yuki Tsunoda. That was it. It was so boring. But I will say that the Red Bull antics at the end have me thinking that we could see something entertaining this year that we haven't seen in a while, but have experienced since times of old. Do you know what I'm talking about, Luke?
Yeah. I blanked here. Look, I was trying to start things not spicy, and look at you. All right, trying to be amicable with the D minus.
Yeah, and, no, it has to be an F. It absolutely has to be an F. But it did set the stage for what I think is something that we haven't seen in a very, very long time, and by that I mean a couple of years. But it's something we see every so often in Formula One, which is an absolutely intense teammate battle. Harkening back to Rosberg, Hamilton, where, right, you know, Rosberg got shellacked every now and again. But, the one before that is probably more apt to our situation, which was Vettel v. Weber. And Checo is the ever likable Weber, and Max is instantly villain Vettel.
Yeah, look, you say that there's going to be an intense strategical or intense teammate battle here. I'm going to disagree with you. We're talking about Perez versus Verstappen. Perez obviously takes the win here today, or on Sunday. It was a very easygoing race from him. Verstappen goes from, I think it was 12th to 2nd. I am going to completely disagree with you here. I don't think Perez ever will lead the championship. I think that every race that Verstappen doesn't go kabang in, he wins. And I include going kabang in qualifying, okay? I know, oh, he didn't go kabang at this race. I don't think Perez is up to the snuff of Verstappen. I don't think it's going to be particularly close. Let's take a look at
Weber. Weber was not up to the snuff of Vettel. Uh-huh. Weber was a clearly inferior driver. But he still had the fight every now and again. And the thing is that Red Bull at the time heavily favored Vettel in those situations. I think Red Bull showed this weekend that actually, you know, Perez was ahead, so we're just going to leave it. And Max lose his little mind.
I you say that, but it took extraordinary circumstances for Perez to get there. Max wins the championship. I would be shocked if we went into October and he wasn't a champion. That, by the way, is round 18 with 6 races left to go.
Yeah, no, I think that's about right. Whether that's what will happen, but it'll be interesting.
I bet you he clinches in Italy.
Yeah.
September 3rd.
Probably. But I just don't see his shenanigans.
I agree with you in that I see Perez getting really mad and just absolutely infuriated and mauling at it.
Remind me again. Who is the guy waiting in the wings for that second seat?
Oh, that would be one Mr. Daniel Ricciardo, who, by the way, has the best bleeping job on earth, baby.
Yeah, you sit back, do some shenanigans for Red Bull marketing, and that's it. Like,
drink a couple beers while you're a rock star.
Yeah, no, it's all of the benefits and
none of the actual job.
None of the actual job, which he did prove he has the yips for. So, you know, things could be worse for Daniel Ricciardo right now. He could be in that McLaren, which looks like a big hunk of dog dude.
Yeah, the McLaren is pretty trash. You know, I read a stat today that I think Lando Norris had never finished below 15th in his entire career, and he's finished 17th in the last 2 races. By the way, only ahead of Valtteri Bottas in this race. Even Oscar Piastri getting up to 15th in there. And I think not only is the car trash, I don't think it particularly suits him. It wasn't built for him. He just does not look comfortable in the car, which is shocking because Norris has been their number one driver for, like, what, 3 years now?
For 3 years, and Piastri did a good job and didn't even talk about it in the post-race press conference. They're like, you beat your teammate. Well done. He goes, it was just a tough day. He's like, you know, we didn't get anywhere near where we wanted out of the car. We just did the best we could.
He
was not looking at Lando at all. I think this might actually be the first hardcore fight that Lando's ever had.
I think we would need to wait to see a few more races between this, but honestly, I'm wondering how much that car has fundamentally changed under Lando Norris's feet. We saw this with Daniel Ricciardo, right? Where you go from a car that's built one way to accommodate one style of driving, and then the next style of driving comes in, and you're not there, right? And you can ask any racer. We could go and ask Ryan, one of the hardest steps you'll ever have to make in a young racing career is going from karts to cars because they handle so much differently. And he's like, every time you jump a series, you're risking killing your career progress because you need to adapt. So at any level, I think the car pulled a rug out from under Lando Norris's feet. And part of that is, you know, Lando Norris needs to be able to adapt. But the other part is, that man is a talented driver. How badly did you mess this up, Mick? Like, how bad is this car? What did you do over the offseason? It shouldn't be that drastic of a change, maybe ever.
No, but maybe Oscar Piastri's driving style is just that fundamentally different, or it neutralizes Lando's fundamental advantage somehow.
Yeah, which would be an odd move if Oscar Piastri's driving style is that much fundamentally different than your number one driver. For you to then hire that young, unproven talent, which is already fundamentally an odd move for a team as high up as McLaren, to Do you see what I'm saying? I'm like, no, why would what kind of higher move is that over last offseason if you're getting a number two driver that is fundamentally different than your number one driver? That seems like a poor move.
I think there's more behind the scenes than we can really appreciate. Mm-hmm. I think that Zach Brown's dealings seem to come with a reputation. So maybe there's a lot more to the story than we know about. What I do know is, you know, it's just different this year. They're not favoring Lando as hard, and they could, my suspicion is that they know they're going to lose Lando, and Lando is going to take a shellacking, and they're maybe setting Lando up to take a shellacking as he leaves McLaren to show that, oh no, it was actually because we were favoring and developing around this kid. And you know, tarnishes stuff moving forward. It, you know, it has happened along the way.
Where would Lando go?
Probably Mercedes or Ferrari.
Won't be
Red Bull, but Mercedes or Ferrari.
I would probably think
he would be a backfill at Ferrari.
Yeah.
If they lose Leclerc.
Yeah, and they very well might lose Leclerc. I think Leclerc is over Ferrari. Let's talk about another racer who I think had a great weekend in George Russell. That being said, the storyline between him and Hamilton, Russell had maybe the greatest radio call of this young season, where, you know, Hamilton is gating up on Russell. He's only a couple seconds back. They say, hey, we need you to roll on over and let Hamilton zippity-doo-dah by. And Russell goes, but Alonso has a 5-second penalty. I need to keep pushing because I can catch him. He can be within him. And they say, Alonso's already taken that penalty. He goes, ah, fuck. But the interesting thing to me came after that. First off, I appreciate that gregariousness from George. I don't, you know, I understand when drivers talk back to the team, but when George says that, I'm like, you know what? If he was under that impression, he has every right to talk back to the team and be like, hey, 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 we could be within him, within 5 seconds of him. We both can leapfrog this guy. Mm-hmm. The interesting part, Hamilton never got by Russell. And in fact, nope. Hamilton started to wane away from Russell's pace and just kind of sat there in the 3-second range and eventually finished up 5 seconds behind George Russell. And I wonder how much of that was the tire waning and how much of that is we see Russell just at the peak of his form.
I don't think it's either. I think Lewis probably saw that George wasn't going to yield to him, so he just decided that discretion was the better part of valor to just bring it home. So you back off and you just let it happen. You know, it's a defeated champion is what it is. He's in his head. He's not going for those gaps and, you know, going for that really killer instinct. He's, you know, just trying to play the long game because the short game, like getting mad and going for it, has actually harmed him in the past. So I think that was Lewis just being like, "What? Oh, all right, guys, whatever." Like at this point, I whatever.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's not going to be a championship maker for Lewis, and Lewis is seasoned enough to absolutely know that it's not a championship maker. So I see your point. I like the form that George is in right now. And I will tip my hat to a pretty gregarious performance to him. Hamilton, as we go on down, Sainz and Leclerc, Charles Leclerc, you said it to the Ferrari list of, you got to tell me that earlier, buddy. Come on.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm getting kind of tired of Leclerc's whinging, if I'm honest. It's just boring me. It's boring me.
Yeah, it couldn't bore you, but can you fault him?
No, Tim. You know, at some point, are we just going to go all French and say, oh, what is this, shit, and then walk away? Or are you going to, you know, go for it, you know, and try to push somebody? You have to be Schumacher at Ferrari. Schumacher just got down dirty and did whatever the team needed to get it done. And Leclerc isn't doing that.
You know, I
Carlos is though.
Yeah, but how many, we're getting it done. Yeah, by continually, Carlos is getting it done despite Ferrari. At what point I mean, look, when you have awful coworkers, okay, you can complain about them. And Leclerc nor Sainz can be their own strategist and be their own pit crew and be their own eyes on the entire rest of the race.
But they can definitely try on some level, because Sainz is very aware of the rest of the race. He aspires to be Fernando Alonso, who has a complete mastery of everything going on in the race.
And yet gained him was 8 seconds on a track where it's hard to even like follow someone effectively.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just trying to find the bright side, man. Like, you know, I know you're putting him down because, you know, you're with the dentist system and everything, but come on, there's got to be something.
You're still on the eye. You're still on the inspire hope. It's okay.
I'm seeing a whole lot of hopelessness in the actual evil empire of Red Bull coming back. And to be honest with you, it does warm my heart a little bit, because they are technically a privateer team, which I think that is, you know, a desperately needed thing in Formula One. Just a team that is out there buying parts, sourcing it like everyone else. And, you know, trying to make it work and win. But they're also kind of freaking evil.
I'll give you a privateer team that warms my cockles. And by warms my
cockles,
I'm going to talk about Haas. And I mean warms my cockles, I mean, yikers. Haas did get a point this week. All right. They got a solid 1 point to their name so far. Hey, by the way, that is good to put them in a solid seventh place. Thank you. I do think, not that I hated this driver lineup, but I think the driver lineup is starting to show its strengths. It's not a good car. It's not a good car.
No,
but when the brakes go
good.
But yeah, exactly. When the brakes go your way, to be able to sneak guys into the top 10 and get points, that is a lower midfield team.
And that's the reason you got rid of Schumacher, was because you needed a reliable rear gunner to get in there.
Yeah. It speaks a lot to the lineup too, that either one of them are capable of sneaking it in there. It's not just Magnussen or just Hulkenberg. Both of them are capable of doing that on any given day. If the brakes go their way, in a race with no DNFs, Haas does not finish in the top 10. But if there's DNFs, if there's missed calls, which there always are, they have the capability to do that. And I think that's very much what's needed. Now they just need to focus on the car and possibly stop doing deals with Russians.
They're going to work on that for sure. But I am excited to see what comes next, because I do hear that they have a lot of upgrades on the way. Mm-hmm. They saved an awful lot with things like that pit wall getting cut. So that's good. But the two big stories, Luke, that came out, would you like to tackle the team or the government?
I'll let you tackle. We'll start with the team.
The team. So turns out that Max Verstappen has a beef with Red Bull. And it is partly that Checo won. And it is partly that he feels his car in particular is unreliable, because he's had issues in qualifying for the first two races of the year. He is so indignant and so incensed that he ignored direct orders from the team to not take the fastest point, the fastest lap point. He did whatever he wanted. They told him, you know, please don't do that. We're not worried about that right now. And he said, yeah, but I am. So to retain his lead in the championship, he went ahead and snagged the fastest lap so that they wouldn't be even on points. So that is Max Verstappen for you. So he is currently leading Checo 44 points to 43. It does look like a close race. You saw Checo celebrate at the end with everyone in the Red Bull thing, except for Jos Verstappen, who stood there very intentionally still and not looking at Checo, but saying, hey, good job. Yeah, good job. The seething ire in his eyes just broiling. And you just could tell that he doesn't feel good about Checo. Now, he was accused of maybe some borderline racism last year when he released a thing on Max's website bashing Red Bull for their support of Checo Perez at the Monaco Grand Prix, but not quite like this. He does seem pretty seething. And then Max went from a whatever, it's okay, it's second, you know, I had to settle for that because of some unreliability issues, to in a post-race press conference, I don't know, blockbuster moment. He said, everyone else is happy, but I am not. Because he feels that the unreliability is only on one side, and it is not fair to his contributions to the team that he isn't getting a more reliable car and winning more often. So,
two things. One, it's two races. I get all the problems, dude. It's two races, man. Like, and your car that went clunk clunk during the race still went, you know, outside the points to second. I don't think you had much going your way. Two, Tim, Max is what? A petulant child.
Yes.
And we all know this. You want to talk about getting bored about whinging.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it really is. He is petulant. He is childish. And I just, you know, he never matures. He never grows. He is a ruthless killer. He is writ large what Lewis is missing a little bit of, which is just killer instinct. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't care who he kills. He's just going to kill and be the most demanding person out there ever. Yeah. And, you know, he'll be rightly remembered as a villain, I think.
I think so, too. Speaking of villains, one of the headlines that caught my attention is, as you know, the Jeddah street circuit that we were at, the Jeddah Corniche circuit, quote unquote street circuit. It was 100% custom built, like Miami or, you know, Montreal, is temporary. And we are getting a new permanent circuit in Qiddiya, which is an area outside of Riyadh, the capital. It's like this big entertainment extravaganza, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a word I did just make up. That sparked a headline, I think 2 days ago, so on Saturday or Friday, that said that they would not be shocked if F1 had two races in Saudi Arabia. Once that circuit got built, because there was just so much demand for the Qiddiya circuit in addition to the already beloved Jeddah Street Circuit. Two races in Saudi Arabia. And I know this is coming from someone who is an advocate and understands and is, you know, totally okay with three races in the USA. I don't really have a problem with that. It's 320 million people spread across the size of continental Europe. But two races in Saudi Arabia, Tim, come on.
Man, that's a lot.
How many races where are we ever going to draw the line on the Middle East? Because the Middle East already has the most races per capita of any like region.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot there. You know,
it's not like Saudi Arabia is a mega populated country, nor is Qatar or Bahrain.
I would think that the UK would get a second one before Saudi Arabia would get a second one.
Which was a discussion. There was a development going on in London that kind of outlined on their development plans a possible GP circuit, quote unquote, through these streets of London. Because Great Britain does not have any adequate racetracks, Tim.
No, they don't. But yeah, your guess is as good as mine as to why they think that's a good idea in Saudi Arabia. I don't know.
Money.
It's just money. Like, it's money laundering is what it is. We don't want to know what's happening. I really, really don't.
No, just smile and turn on the TV, Tim.
Exactly. I'll be entertained by what you put forth. But that is it. I will not look a gift horse in the mouth. you know, I mean, they've proven time and time again, Formula One has, that they will go to places of massive moral issues and freely take their money. We mean, we used to go to Russia, for Christ's sake, and thank God they committed a war crime.
Yeah. Oh, and don't forget too that we would still be in Russia if it was possible for the drivers to be able to immigrate into and out of Russia.
Yep.
That's why we canceled it. Don't yeah, kid yourself. Say,
they would have kidnapped Lewis for sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, don't kid yourself. The only reason we're not there is because you can't visit Russia and then visit like about 200 countries.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
In back-to-back weeks, like they just won't let you.
No, they'll kick you out. But you know, I guess, sure. I don't know. I feel like the governing body, the FIA, is having issues anyway. They cannot, for the life of them, figure out how to enforce a penalty. You know, it's a couple weeks in a row now. Esteban Ocon was last week, where they like the strict enforcement is so jarring, and then they can't make up their minds, and then afterward they penalize and take it back, and then the FIA is telling MBS that he should really stop interfering in the valuations of Formula One as a whole. We have, you know, the FIA saying, yeah, we're entertaining a second one now. It's just it's so much that is so against what a governing body should be doing, that it's like, you guys need to knock it off and get your shit together before you come back in here.
Do you get the feeling that the FIA and Formula One management are absolutely ruining all of the momentum that F1 has had, and they are going to fumble the bag as hard as maybe any sport ever has?
Yep, I get that distinct impression. You know, they have a golden moment here to really set up Formula One for the next 100 years, and they are failing miserably.
I don't understand why it's so hard for them to figure out penalties. Let's talk about the Alonso penalty, okay? He lines up improperly at the race start, which is quickly assessed to be a 5-second penalty. He goes in and he serves that. And then it comes through after the race, after he's finished third, that they're investigating him for having taken that penalty improperly because he was on the jack. Then I think it was 2 hours after the podium celebration. It was so far after the podium celebration. It was later in the day, right? They took away the podium. Then Aston Martin came through and said, whoa, 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 this happens all the time. Here's 100 examples. They actually went to the FIA and said, here's a list of all the examples in which that was acceptable. And then magically, Tim, it was unreversed.
Yeah.
The funny part was, I think George Russell actually held the trophy. Like, there's pictures of him with that third place trophy.
Yeah.
So he had it. Here you go. All right, now take it back. I want to point out a couple things here. All right, that I know I am the annoying guy who goes, well, you maybe should just run it a little like IndyCar. I'm that guy. All right, but I want to point out section 9.1 of the IndyCar handbook. I would like to point out specifically, by the way, laps 9. Yeah, I would like to point out section 9.2. Uh-huh. Yeah, 9.2.23. Anyway, it states that penalties must be assessed within an hour after the checkered flag of a race. What? IndyCar, a series with maybe generously 1/100 of the budget that Formula One has figured out a way to say, all right, hour after the end of the race, that's our cutoff. We can't give you a penalty beyond that. And even that, Tim, you don't see that happen very often in IndyCar, that they use up any amount of that time.
I can't remember the last time I could remember it.
Two, also in that section, when you take a time penalty, there is a member of IndyCar, their timing and scoring and safety crew, at your pit stop. Mm-hmm. And you drop them, and they, you've seen it. They drop them, they hold their hand up, they watch the clock, 5.0, and then you go. They will tell, they will have a person there say, hold it, hold it. And if something's wrong, Tim, what do? They don't start the clock on the penalty. Is it that hard for Formula One to do that? Why is there no official right there? Teams are just guessing that this is the right way. And then we're figuring it out 6 hours after the race.
I genuinely cannot remember the last time I saw this penalty in Formula One.
Right.
And to see it two weekends in a row makes me feel like this is dumb. And, you know, you guys are now strictly enforcing something out of freaking nowhere. And you expect us to just take it. It's just so stupid. It interferes and it makes the FIA more important than the race itself, which just drives me insane.
9.2.2. I just, the fact, and you know, Will Buxton brought this up too, in that, like, oh, you know, what's the real issue here? But I really do think there is something to be the fact of, like, if the FIA wants to say somebody did an improper procedure on taking the penalty, and teams really are just kind of, this is how we do it, go. You should have a guy there that is holding it up, and like an FIA inspector to just go, well done. It's like $100 to get, you're not paying your marshals anything. Take the best qualified marshal, give him $100 and put him in the pit lane and just have him go. I don't know. Saudi bucks. I don't know what they use over there.
Saudi bucks. Yeah, man.
That we're racing in Australia, you know, coming up
in
here.
Two weeks' time.
Pay him $100 dues for all I care.
Yep. There was the 12 hours of Sebring that happened this weekend. Friend Dylan filled us in on. It looks like the Porsche class decided to wipe themselves out in the GTD Cup. And that Romain Grosjean looked to have had a rough weekend in his Lamborghini. Beyond that, I don't really know of any other motorsport stuff that happened this weekend. Luke, do you?
I don't think any others. I kind of hit on the ones that I wanted to hit on. We do it every time around this year. Why in the world do we start in February in St. Pete and we don't race for another month after that IndyCar? I know people have been saying, fix your schedule, ovals. But like, seriously, I don't care if we have to race in a dirt track in rural Kentucky, which would be awesome. Just find a race for April. It doesn't even have to be every other week. Just find a race for April, man.
do something, because this ain't working. This dog don't hunt.
I missed IndyCar because, look, all right, after the first race of the year in Bahrain, all right, it was nice to turn on the St. Pete GP and be like, oh, gosh, I do love this sport.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted that on Sunday and I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I hate to be that guy. I hate to be that guy. I'm unapologetically that guy. But
I was gonna say, it is what it is. Yeah. But yeah, it was a bit of a bummer not to have it.
I also want to say too, as if my racing withdrawal like can't get any worse. I was supposed to be in Dallas this last weekend and we ended up having like fist-sized hail at the track on Thursday. So I didn't even take off. The plane didn't even take off to leave for Dallas.
I watched that MH370 documentary on Netflix with my partner, and maybe not flying is like a better idea. Like, oh, that sounds better.
Okay, a counterpoint. I love flying, and you know this.
Fair enough. But counter to your counter, you could just disappear apparently without a trace, and an entire government will just stop caring about you.
Is that supposed to be a negative?
Nice. I like it. Okay.
I was going to say, you're basically describing my retirement plan at age 45.
Jesus.
Why do you think I call all these races, okay?
Oh
You
my
think I
God.
cash these checks into my bank account? No, don't look at what's in my bed behind me.
Oh my God. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. All right, folks. Well, with that, we will catch you next time. I have been Tim. He has been Luke. Any other sign-offs you want to throw in there, Luke?
Hasta luego, power bottoms.
Jesus Christ.